This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 506, recorded on July 18th, 2017. That would be a Tuesday, per our normal schedule. And when I say hour, I mean Sally Draper. Good afternoon, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How are you today?
Good. We're back at it again, another Wells Tech show. It's been a whole week, and we've had some time to do some exciting prep. I am very interested in your ministry resource this week.
I am very excited to share it because my husband Kevin and I spent last week in our off time, just a fun little extracurricular that we added to our summer activities, hosting a robot camp. We had 8 young men join us and taught them all about robotics and coding, and it was a lot of fun, and we learned a lot.
You've done this before, right? This is not the first, not your first rodeo.
That's correct. It's our second year of hosting a robot camp out at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School. We just used their venue as a good, convenient location. We actually had kids coming from Mankato and Arlington, as well as New Ulm, so kind of drew a crowd from all the area, and it was a lot of fun. The kids were super excited, and I think they learned a lot in the process.
Cool. So what got you started with this? Is this something you'd seen elsewhere or just your own brainchild? Did you follow some kind of template?
Great question. Actually, I would credit my friend Jason Schmidt as being the inspiration because Jason's joined us quite a bit on Wells Tech, Martin, and you know he's talked about doing robotics projects of all flavors, including a summer camp with this particular robot we used this summer, the M-Bot. And so I, in past, have, dedicated volunteered some time in a school computer lab at St. John's in Sleepy Eye. I really enjoyed that. I actually did a summer camp program for those students one summer, just using technology and that kind of thing. So this was a pretty natural fit for us. Kevin, being the inventor guy, came up with, his own 3D printer, which he enjoyed sharing with students in local schools, and it just kind of evolved from there. So we offered up the robot camp, and last year it was kind of a DIY robot. It was one that Kevin had designed and printed parts on his 3D printer, and you could manipulate your robot and build it in different ways and see what kind of results you got in the process. This year we went with one out of the box, so we were able to order the robot. It's a really cool kit. I should probably share my screen because I have it up here on my computer. As I mentioned, it's called the M-Bot, and it's from a company called MakeBlock. And if you do any reading very deeply into their documentation and things, you'll understand that they are not native English speakers. I believe the company's based in Japan, but they have a really nice website, and not just this robot, but others that they offer as well. I think they even have some 3D printing stuff on here as well. But what's nice about it is the box that you get has all the parts in it ready to be built, including a little screwdriver / Allen wrench kind of combo device. They have two versions. They have one that works with Wi-Fi and one that you connect to your computer via USB to transfer programs over, and then it has Bluetooth capabilities so it can be operated with your smartphone. And that's the one we went with, the Bluetooth. And I'll just make mention that I think the normal retail price is maybe somewhere around $95, but we found it at Mono Price and got it for $70, which we found was the best price out there. So pretty reasonable robot to get started with. It includes an Arduino processor, and then, like I said, the Bluetooth capabilities. It comes with a little infrared remote as well, so you can not only control it with your smartphone if you want to, you can also control it with a little remote control device. I should have gotten mine and held it up in front of the screen, but it would look just like this guy that you're seeing on my computer screen right now. So that was our robot of choice this summer. And like I said, we had 8 kids come, but we didn't just dive right into robotics. Kevin spent some time talking about all kinds of robotics concepts, about things like how motors work and electromagnetism and how, you know, the poles repel and attract to turn the motor and create the electricity that generates through the system. He taught them about different types of sensors. The MBOT actually has some distance sensors. They look like little eyes, but they actually send out a high-pitched sound that comes back to it and measures distance. It has a line sensor as well, so it can kind of understand the contrast between black and white and follow the black line that's on the screen, on the floor, or whatever it may be. It even comes with a little figure eight sheet of paper that you can lay out and make it follow the line, you know, to see that demonstrated. Comes with some programs built into it. One of them is obstacle avoidance, where the sensors recognize when they're within a certain distance of something and turn and go a different direction. And the other is the line follower program. So pretty good little robot to get started with. And they did spend some time, I think somewhere on the website I read it was like a 25-minute build. I think they took more like an hour to get their robots built. But that was kind of like getting Legos out of the box and having the little booklet to follow. I didn't see that as a super instructional moment. I mean, they understood that they were connecting the sensors and that the sensors had wires connected to them that plugged in. They got the chance to plug in the Bluetooth chip, so they saw the board and they plugged in, lining up the pins correctly. And it was kind of hard to do wrong because one side had 3 pins and the other side had 4, you know, so it was pretty obvious what they needed to do. But just getting their hands on some real equipment, unlike, you know, plastic Legos or whatever that they've built with in the past. 2 motors, obviously, driving the 2 back wheels, and then it had kind of a little pivot wheel on the front that just turned as it was guided by the power of those wheels that were turning in the back.
So an hour to put it together, and then subsequent time. So what kind of time should a person allow if they were thinking about doing something like this?
Yeah, that first night was more instructional and just getting it put together. And by the end of the night, they had it put together and they could confirm that it could run the 2 programs that were built into it. So that was our first night. I think our sessions were about 2.5 hours. And that there was a little break time in there. We fed them some chocolate and things like that. That's always a good thing to do when you're with little 6th through 9th grade boys. They get extra hyper on that sugar. So it was fun. So by the second night, then, they were ready to make their robot do some things, control it with the programming, and that was what we did the next 3 nights, basically, Tuesday through Thursday. But we didn't start right away using our computers. Actually, we started kind of in an unplugged fashion, and I had found a resource. It's called Coding a Lego Maze. And if you check out the blog post, there's a link to it. I'll just share real quickly on my screen. You can see a picture of it from the website. It's from a website called Research Parent. And I thought this was a neat activity. I think their big hook is that they use the word Lego in the title. But if you are able to see the screen or if you check it out later, what you'll see is that they had a maze and they built Legos around it to kind of make the walls of the maze. So there were really no Legos involved in the process beyond making it look cool. It's basically a maze on a sheet of paper and kids can build Legos around that to call it something Lego. But more important was the concept of navigating through the maze. So instead of using Legos, we just used the paper maze. Here's a copy of one. And again, it's part of that download package that you get for free from Research Parent. And we didn't mention Legos at all, so they never knew what they were missing about building Lego walls. Instead, we actually gave them a little guy. You know, it's nice to have a little guy to walk through the maze. And our little guy was from our 3D printer. His name's Jimmy, something my son designed. And they would take Jimmy then and navigate him through the maze. So put him on start and figure out how many steps they needed or boxes they needed to move through and what direction they needed to turn to get to the end of the maze. So that was the concept. But the other piece of the puzzle is we gave them some paper strips. So to start with, we gave them strips that said stuff like go forward and turn right. And they actually coded by laying out the paper on the table what the little Jimmy guy needed to do to get through the maze. He had to go forward and then turn right. And there were certain numbers of directions and steps they needed to take. And it turned into this pretty long thing that said go forward a whole bunch of times, you know. But they had actually written some code by doing that. They had written instructions. So it was a very kind of tactical way to teach them about, you know, the kind of instructions that are part of coding. We went on from there and we had more parts that we handed out to them. And in the more parts folder, it had things like for this many steps. So they would fill in, you know, for three steps, go forward, that kind of thing. So they broke down their code and it was a lot shorter that way. We explained how programmers are pretty lazy people and they like to do things the easiest way possible. And that was fun since Kevin is a programmer for me to say that. And then finally we had some other sheets of paper because we love paper, don't we, Martin? And on those pages, on those little strips, they got if and then else statements. So if this, then do this, else do this. So, and then we talked about looping and doing that over and over so that after they had written that long program, they could condense it all the way down basically to one thing, one set of commands that they just did over and over, and it would get them all the way through the maze. So that was kind of priming the pump, and that took maybe an hour of our time to go through that process. But especially because we had kids at all different levels, I think it was a really great way to just kind of lay some groundwork on the concept of coding. And then we were ready to kind of dig in and use our computers because the MBOT works with something called MBOT is made by MakeBlock. The software that you use to write programs for it is called MBlock. And MBlock is actually a copy of the Scratch computer program. Again, I'll share my screen real quickly. I sure am talking a lot. I'm sorry about that. But Scratch is a real graphical drag and drop. The little different commands kind of snap together, and it's all color-coded. Where you add different types of controls. And this MBlock is basically got one more section of commands for robots. So commands to tell your robot to move forward or to call on a certain port where those sensors are plugged in, to judge distance, to do all those kind of things. The robot also has some lights on it. So you can control the color of the lights and the speed that they flash and things like that. So from then on, like midday Tuesday through Thursday, we'd demonstrate little things and the kids would just run with it. They were just so ready and capable of learning to program in this way. They were ready to experiment and do their own takes on things that we demonstrated. So in my blog post, I gave you a few examples of some of the things that they did. They definitely had it making sounds right away. It was, oh, I can do a police siren. And I was like, man, this is going to be a long week if we have to listen to police sirens all week long. But eventually they moved on to ice cream trucks. And some of the kids, very musically inclined, picked out Twinkle Twinkle Little Star on their robots and had it play all the way through flawlessly. And then the ultimate Star Wars Imperial March. It was da 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 da. Mm-hmm. Was pretty cool. Obviously they can make it turn and go certain distances. We actually taped out mazes on the ground with, you know, just blue tape and they had to make it get through the maze without touching any of the sides. they program their own line sensor and obstacle avoidance. The same type of program that comes built in, they learned how to do that themselves and program those. And then quite naturally, and this is the main picture that I shared in the blog post, so you'll have to check out the blog post, they decided they needed to battle. So if you do any robotics camps, just be prepared. They want to put them up against each other. It was battle bots time. So they built a little arena. We had like some 2x4s and also some toilet paper rolls that they used for different things, knocking down the toilet paper rolls and stuff. Well, that was the edges of their arena, and the sensor could detect those and try to keep them in the arena and not running into anyone else. And the more that got into the arena, the harder that was, and they had a lot of fun with that. So we kind of saved that till the very end. And then our last night we did a parent demo, and Kevin had talked with the guys, and different ones wanted to show different things about what they had learned during the week. And so they got up and demonstrated. And then when we were finally done, they were like, it's time for BattleBots. And they went and set up the arena themselves and had some last night battles in the arena. So all in all, a great week and something I think that can be used to launch robotics in any kind of setting. You could do it in a school setting, obviously. You could do it after school as an enhancement, you know, even if you spread it out over weeks of instruction and stuff. You could have a set of these MBOTs for use at school and maybe share them between classrooms or with, you know, the after school crowd or whatever it is. Just a real flexible robot and something they had a lot of fun with.
So did the kids pay for this, or how was that how was that paid for?
Yeah, it was a fee-based program, so we charged, and what we found was parents are willing to pay for this kind of training. And so definitely we covered the cost of the robot and the snacks and our time in the process, but
So a couple questions. If somebody's interested in doing this, how technical does the leader / whatever need to be? Do they need to have programming experience?
I don't think they have to have programming experience as long as they invest some time in learning it themselves. But it's pretty straightforward. These kids learned it. I think adults can learn it as well. And it's not intimidating at all. And there are a lot of resources. I just linked and showed a few, but there are all the programs that we taught. You can find examples of all of those out on the web. So you can print them off and give them to the kids if you want. And they can just, you know, copy and modify the programs.
Okay. Noticed you had all boys.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think it would be possible to get more of a mix?
Yeah, that's a great question. Last summer, we actually had two girls. Actually, it was a family of three siblings, so one boy and two girls from the same family. But the girls held their own. They did just fine. And we're actually doing it again next week in a nearby town, and we have two girls coming then as well.
Okay.
That's a great question, and I know a lot of resources out on the web are dedicated to getting girls more involved in this kind of thing. I don't know if you noticed, but on the MBOT page, they actually have a pink version to go with their blue version.
That would help, probably, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't order any pinks this year, but I know that that's an effort that is out there.
And I noticed in the video that you have embedded on the blog post the use of tablets or smartphones. Did you do that? Is that part of the whole system, or is that something that has to be added on?
Well, with this particular MBOT, and there are two versions. One works over Wi-Fi. This one we used works over Bluetooth. You definitely can use, and there are actually two programs that you can use. One of them is that MBlock software, the whole drag and drop thing. And I have it on my phone. It totally works.
Were they building these programs on devices, not on a computer?
Right, exactly. Okay. For our purposes, we thought it best that they have computers. So we asked everyone if they could to bring a laptop.
Okay.
And of the eight, we had three that didn't have laptops. So we provided laptops for them to use during the class. And then they can still install it on a home computer. Maybe they have a desktop at home,
right,
or whatever.
Okay.
But definitely you can do it on here. There's actually another mobile app, and all of it's linked up on their website and in the links I provided. And it's more of a... it's kind of a functional, let's see if I can bring it up and show you an example. It has like a wheel for colors. So if you want to control the light colors, you just kind of dial it up on a wheel. And it's called, they're all called something kind of similar. I think it's called Make Block is the name of this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just show you an example on my phone. So those kind of dial up type right. commands, or if you have it hooked up, it'll show you how far away things are or whatever with a visual user interface
sure.
to control.
Right. Okay.
So, and there's a lot of tools for that. Like there's a piano keyboard, so you can make it play songs by typing it on the keyboard or whatever.
Right. So beyond the educational side, what's the ministry angle? What applications here? I can envision, at least off the top of my head, a congregation or a school doing this, inviting the community, you know, getting kids on campus, that kind of thing. Have you thought through that? I don't know if you've used it in a kind of way, but I can envision that could be a potential application.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I was thinking was, you know, I think there are many people out there that are very sports oriented and they've had great successes running soccer camps.
Yep.
I could see someone who has more of a technology bend having great success running STEM type activities.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely populations of kids out there that gravitate more toward this kind of thing than,
sure.
or maybe there's some that do both, you know, but
right.
I think there would definitely be appeal. And like I said, the parents are very eager for their kids to have this kind of knowledge. They see the need, you know, for technology.
Well, certainly they see STEM as a potential career. You know,
yeah, definitely.
In that field, and they want to introduce that just like they would introduce, you know, anything else. So,
and, you know, come to think of it, I wouldn't call it a success story or whatever, but just reflecting back, one of the moms came to us the second night as she dropped her kid off the second night. And she said, my son never talks. He's super quiet. And I couldn't get him to shut up last night. He just went on. And he told me, and my mom flag went up, mom, this could be my career. Mm. He said those words to her after the first night of robot camp. He was that fired up about it and stuff. It had really, you know,
yeah.
unlocked
something. That's a little different than telling your mom you're going to be a star baseball or basketball player.
I think it is.
More
and he was
realism here because the STEM field is wide open. And, you know, we hear about tech shortages all over the place now.
Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, obviously we let our light shine. The children were all from, as it turned out, last summer we had some from public school, but these were all from Area Lutheran Elementary Schools. And we talked about our faith and what we did for a living and things like that, you know, throughout the process. And so
there's no reason you couldn't have a devotion or prayer, you know, both him saying whatever. So
definitely. Cool. And, you know, even if there are schools that have limited budget, I could see maybe even a group of schools that are close to each other sharing the expense of coming up with a bank of these and using mm-hmm. them throughout the school year as well. It doesn't just have to be in a week-long setting, like I said.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to do it next year?
No, we're going to do it next week, and then we'll think about next year.
Think about it. Very good. So if you want to learn a little bit more, we'll have that on our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. You can see all those, all of our media or our ministry resource blog posts are up there. And this one is no different. So very cool. Thanks. Sally, I'm going to let you talk a little bit more on your pick of the week. What did you select for us this week?
Well, it comes from one of our favorite sites. I was trying to reflect back and remember how we learned about Make Use Of, but a very good tech tip site is makeuseof.com. And perhaps it was Pastor Rob Gunther that first pointed us toward it. So thanks, Pastor Gunther, for that, if you're the one. Anyway, there was a great article from Make Use Of recently. It's called 20 Tips for Every First-Time Chromebook User, Things You Should Know. And I happen to have my Chromebook right here. but you can't see that because it's not on the screen, is it? Call me Grace after 506 times. I know I have to stop screen sharing. And one of the things right away that they say is that you can have multiple accounts on your Chromebook. So that's what it's actually showing on my screen. And as a teacher slash administrator, I found it nice to have like a perhaps a personal account, your teacher account, and maybe setting up a pseudo student account so you could log in as a student and get their experience and project their experience on the screen or whatever it may be. So just some ideas. It's very easy to log out and log in as a different persona by having those different accounts on your computer. And that's just one. That's just number one on the list. Create multiple user profiles. And the list is pretty expansive. There's all kinds of tips here, everything from screenshots to reprogramming some of the available keys that have different capabilities like control and alt and things like that, how to get out if it's an app is frozen, how to make apps open as if they're programs instead of opening in the Chrome browser. So it makes you feel like you have a laptop, even if you are using the Chrome browser in reality for everything that's going on. Lots of great tips here. I liked, and this one I think you used recently, Martin, as your tip of the week, but it goes into explanation about two-finger tapping being a right click and three-finger tapping and three-finger slash or, you know, scrolling and things like that, you know. And so I think it's a great primer for any Chromebook user. And, you know, I'm becoming more and more convinced that my next computer is going to be a Chromebook instead of a laptop for my own personal use, because I'm kind of down on the bubble personally of really only needing maybe one or two programs installed locally at this point. So if I can find replacements for those, I think I may be going Chromebook for my next purchase. So enjoying learning all about tips, and those of you that are new to the ecosystem, or maybe you're an old pro, you may still pick up something from these 20 tips from Make Use Of.
And now is the time. School is approaching. And those Chromebooks be in the hands of the kids. So my pick of the week is a Apple technology. And let me pull up a good blog post I found about AirPlay. AirPlay, if you're not on the Apple side of things, you may not be all that interested, but a lot of people have Apple devices, so I thought I'd at least give some love to those folks. Mm-hmm. AirPlay is a way to cast or share your screen to another device. Could be a computer, could be an Apple TV. And I've been talking to a few teachers lately who are trying to figure out maybe a better way to kind of present in the classroom. And one approach to that, if you are a Mac user, if you use an iPad in class, for instance, and have an Apple TV, is to go that route, is to cast wirelessly, which is really the intrigue, over Wi-Fi straight to an Apple TV. Or you could, with a tool like Reflector, cast it or stream it to your laptop, and then hooked up your laptop to the overhead projector. So you've got, or the LCD projector. So you have a number of different options, but again, the benefit is that you are not tethered. You don't have to sit in the front of the classroom. You can grab your iPad and you can use AirPlay mirroring to show your screen or your presentation or a website or whatever, and have that cast to whatever's connected to your projector and have the freedom to move around the classroom as you do it. My wife does this. She hooks it up through the through her laptop, which is connected to the projector. But this blog post talks about different ways to AirPlay the video from your iPhone or iPad. You can do audio as well to from your iPhone or iPad. There's lots of different setups here, and it's a great article on how to set it up, how to switch modes, how to make things work in a separate display. So you're only showing one screen and you can have another screen at your disposal. Lots of different ways to set this up. But AirPlay is a technology that comes free with Apple devices. And at Apple's recent developer conference earlier here in June, they announced AirPlay 2, which is going to be coming with their newer operating system and newer devices, which is even more reliable and has some more features built into it. But this is something to consider if you're kind of getting your classroom set up and wish you had something a little bit more flexible that you could maybe carry around, use an iPad or something like that, and kind of up your game a little bit when you're doing presentations, because teachers are doing a lot of that these days. This kind of frees you up and lets you do that and be a little bit more flexible in how you manage your classroom. So that is my pick of the week, just simply the AirPlay technology built into those Apple devices.
Excellent.
You ever use that, Sally?
I had the Reflector app a long time ago, yep. But I haven't used it lately. I'd love to be able to share my screen the way you can, though, on Wells Tech. That would be the perfect solution for me, but I don't
have that. All you have to do is on the same network, same mm-hmm. Wi-Fi network, and the equipment is not a big barrier at this point. It's pretty easy to set up. So I think there are probably even projectors now that even support AirPlay. I could be wrong in that, but I think I've seen some of the newer ones that support that as a connection. So you don't even need an Apple TV. All right. Should we move along to do we have any community feedback?
We have a couple of things from community feedback.
Okay.
One of them from Kevin Smith, who is following up on an article you referenced not long ago, Martin. He is talking about the newer USB connectors, and I think you warned us that eventually the wider USB connectors are going to become a thing of the past.
Type A, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be moving to this Type C. And he had a couple of good articles to share about USB Type C. And so for those that want to learn up a little bit more, I think these articles go into a little more depth than even what you had shared previously, Martin. So check out USB Type-C and Type 3.1 Explained, and then All Things 3.1 and Type-C and Explainer. So
my youngest daughter just bought a new phone. She had an iPhone and went to Android this time, Huawei. I forget what the model is, but it did not have a micro USB. It had a Type C connector for charging, etc. So I thought that was interesting. And she doesn't have any Type C cables other than the one that came with it. So it's going to cost a little bit for this transition to happen. But Type C is nice because it's reversible. A lot of people like that part of it. It's a small connector. It's about the size of a mini USB mini connector, but it you can plug it in either way, which is kind of the appeal of the Thunderbolt connections. It's Thunderbolt lightning connectors on an Apple product. You can put them in either way, so you no longer have to be frustrated by, and I always am, no matter how I put it in, it's the wrong way. this solves that problem, and so it's a good, I think it's a good direction.
Good stuff. By the way, I have a tip for anyone looking for cables, just from personal experience. I regularly volunteer at the Treasure House, which is New Ulm's resale shop for Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School, and they always have cables. So if you're ever looking for cheap prices on cables, check out your local thrift store, because you might find exactly what you're looking for. It's surprising.
Really? I would have never thought to look there.
Yeah, like people get rid of phones and they just, you know, dump their cables or whatever. Right. Anyway, okay. I've found a lot of good cables at the Treasure House. So.
Who knew?
Just so you know. One more thing to mention in community feedback, and that is from our Wells Google Schools. It's actually something I came across and shared on Wells Google Schools. It's an article from the Google Docs people themselves, and a pretty cool innovation that they've baked into Google Docs now. So it will take a document and quickly create a Google form from the contents of a document. So it allows you to quickly and easily create a Google form from within a doc. Simply select text, click a button to add your questions, and then you can choose from a variety of different question types, ideal for converting traditional worksheets to Google Forms. So
kind of like your little test builder from Class Notes, that kind of thing. Interesting.
Yeah.
So it whatever you've got highlighted or copied is the question itself, and then you put the answers together, or this is just
it's a form for them to fill out. So you would decide.
You could have multiple choice, but you could have free text,
right,
or whatever.
Just a free text or
everything that's
multiple
available
choice, then you input
Google
the
form,
answers.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. So, cool. Makes sense.
Stuff. Yeah.
Is that it for community feedback?
That will do it for this week, yes, sir.
If you'd like to contribute to the show, join the conversation. WellsTech.wells.net is the place to go, or email us, WellsTech@wells.net. We'd love to have you in the show. So take some time to do that. If you've got a question, comment, suggestion, your own ministry resource, that'd be great. Let's move on to featured video.
We do have a featured video this week, and it comes to us from our friends over at Your Time of Grace, connected with Grace Milwaukee Downtown Ministry, Time of Grace. And these videos...
St. Marcus, Milwaukee.
I am sorry, I said that wrong.
Easy mistake.
Yeah, I knew that too, but sorry about that.
Time of Grace, Pastor Jesky out of St. Marcus, yeah.
That's what I meant. St. Marcus. Okay, so Your Time of Grace is a daily video ministry, and recently I was just checking out their website, their YouTube channel, and looked to see what some of their more popular videos were, and came across this one, 4 Tips for Reading Your Bible. Their most popular. It's been viewed over 42,000 times. It's only 3 minutes, but I think there's some great tips here for reading your Bible. Pastor Mike Novotny is the one speaking, and he has just some real good concise points for you to consider, one of which was to unplug and not necessarily
That was interesting to me. And there's certainly value. He makes a good point. He makes a good case for that. So just a distraction-free approach, because when you're on a device, that was his main point, and when you're on a device, you've got all things that could take you on some side trip. You know, it could be a Facebook notification or text message or whatever. You don't get all that stuff if you've got your paper Bible in front of you.
That's right. All right, so check out that video. It'll be embedded on the Wells Tech page. And maybe you want to go over to Your Time of Grace and subscribe to their YouTube channel. They're putting out great stuff.
Yep, absolutely. They're doing a nice job. Different speakers all making great points. All right, we're going to be back next week. It'll be my turn for a ministry resource, and I've got to do a little homework on that. I have no idea what we will find, but hopefully it'll be worth your while. So return and join us for show 507. Just a reminder, show 508 will be taking place on the campus of Luther Preparatory School in Watertown, Wisconsin. Sally's coming across the river. We'll meet up there in Watertown and be part of Synod Convention. We have some responsibilities there, but we're going to take some time out and do a show on Tuesday afternoon after the sessions, after the plenary session is completed there, and bring you some interviews that we've got lined up, which I think you'll enjoy. So you got that to look forward to as well. Definitely. I want to thank everybody for joining us for this show. We are so happy that you decide to give us 45 minutes of your time over your crowded summer, and share the fact that this show exists with friends, family, whoever might be interested in technology and ministry and where those two meet. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.